It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Each month on this program, we welcome the mayor, Bill Peduto, to our studios for a discussion of key issues facing the city. And today, his honor is making his February appearance with us. Mayor Peduto, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Paul. It's been a good week so far.
Last time you were here, you talked about Sidney Crosby. He's on a streak. So
remember what I said, the best trade the Pens made all year was the good Sidney Crosby for the bad Sidney Crosby.
It worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out. Well, if you have a comment or question for the mayor, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Mayor Peduto, I'd like to start by getting your reaction to the results in New Hampshire last night. Interesting results. What's your take?
Well, I guess they were expected results, at least by the polls that have been out for a couple months now. I think the Kasich finishing second was probably the big surprise in that race. You know, that's my own political two cents, so I'm not attacking anybody else's, but in their opinions. But the more that I follow Donald Trump's strategy, the more it looks like WWE. And it was in that debate the other day when he was being attacked, and rightfully so, on an issue of the use of eminent domain outside of his casino to build a parking lot for limousines, and people who didn't want to sell their houses were forced out by government in order to have the limousine parking lot, where the people in the audience began to boo him. And then he started going after the audience members. And it was just like, you know, one of those wrestlers, like, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, Pittsburgh, when I come in there. And it's like, I'm watching this going like, you know, American history in the future will be studying these debates and looking at it and going like, what went on during that time period to allow that to have been the criteria of electing the leader of the free world?
I think you summed it up pretty well there. You know, with all apologies to Vince McMahon, I guess. As far as you, of course, are a Democrat, so looking at what happened on that side of it last night, I'm interested, as I'm sure others are, if they don't know already, in who you're supporting, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, well, I like Senator Sanders, but I'm supporting her, and I really do believe it's her time to be the president of the United States. I have a lot of friends and a lot of people who were very active in my campaign who are supporting Senator Sanders. I support most of the issues that he is standing for, and I'm working with a coalition of mayors from across the country in making sure that that Hillary Clinton also is supporting those issues. You know, people talk about electability and other factors. What I see right now is the momentum to be able to continue what the Obama administration has done really being something that she has the ability to do. So I don't disrespect other people's support of other candidates, even though I do my studio wrestler imitation to some of the Trump supporters. But the fact is I think we have two good candidates, and I believe that coming out of New Hampshire that Hillary Clinton will be starting to show the strength that she has all throughout the United States.
The candidates have been talking a great deal about economic disparity, and that is certainly an issue we're facing here in Pittsburgh. Earlier this month, you spoke at the University of Pittsburgh and lamented the fact that there are, in your words, two Pittsburghs. Explain what it is that you're seeing and how you plan to address that issue.
Well, there are. I mean, and that's not a surprise to anybody. I mean, I don't think we talk about issues openly enough when it comes to issues of disparity, the interaction between police and community, issues on race. And when we do, we start to get into this dialogue that is either very negative, where all you're doing is identifying the problem, or very polarizing, where it's sort of one side's right, one side's wrong. So in Pittsburgh, we, you know, this is the same thing we had 100 years ago when you had the people that owned the mills and the people that worked in the mills, and there was a vast difference between the two of them. And there was no way for the people who worked in the mills to even get into the middle class. And we solved that problem right here in Pittsburgh and in places like Detroit and Cleveland and others, where we created unions and the workers had rights and they were able to buy a Buick and be able to go to the Jersey Shore on vacation and own their own home and knew that their kids were going to have a better life than them. And now, not just in Pittsburgh, but all over this country, you're seeing this separation, and it's real once again. So these are the issues. When I talked to Bill de Blasio on Saturday, and we're talking about coming out of Iowa, because I saw him like at 12:30 at night being interviewed on MSNBC, and it's just like, I can see it in your face that you're frustrated with some of this stuff too. And we start talking about what are the issues that would help to give people who are being left behind this new economy an opportunity to be a part of it. And that's what you see in Pittsburgh. All this great stuff going on. I just met with a company from Taiwan yesterday that's looking to create a global innovation center in some American city, and we're on the short list. Tata from India has created their global innovation center in Pittsburgh. It's under construction now in Oakland, and we beat out San Francisco and Boston to bring them here. Obviously, Uber, that had zero employees, and now they have 214, and by the end of the year, they'll have 600. And in the next 3 years, a possibility of over 1,000, a big mill being built, basically, with technology and innovation, and Google, and Microsoft, and Intel, and Bosch, and all of that. Pittsburgh is doing great, except for the 20 to 30% that have no connection to it. So the issues we have to deal with: affordable housing, access to quality healthcare, access to quality education, the building blocks of giving people opportunity. You're not giving them anything. You're giving them opportunity to then become a part of it. And that's really where the role of government, I believe, has a role. And that's where you differentiate between, and going back to the presidential, where Democrats and Republicans side. Is there a role for government in order to be able to provide opportunity for people to be a part of a growing new economy? Or should the market decide that? When the market decides that, we saw what happened, where people lived in poverty, and basically we led the nation in typhoid from 100 years ago to where government got involved and we were able to create a middle class. So my goal, my role, is to be able to provide the essentials of giving people the opportunity to join the middle class. And since we did that before in Pittsburgh and we were the ones that created it, I want us to see it, us do it again.
412-246-2002 if you want to join our conversation with Mayor Peduto here on Essential Pittsburgh. Let's go to the phones. We have Ted in Mount Washington. Hi, Ted. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
How you doing, Mayor? How you doing?
Doing pretty good, Ted.
Hey, real quick, I was recently talking to Hop Hendricks, and he was just frustrated, you know, not just with your administration, but past administration, of not having a way to allow small business owners, especially minority owners, access to city contracts. He was saying this has been a constant theme through every single administration, and he just says it's nothing but smoke and mirrors. What do you have to say about that, and how can you improve that, be different from the previous administration?
Great question, Ted. And Hop is somebody I have great respect for. He's been a leader throughout the city of Pittsburgh in pushing issues like this, and doing it in a very professional way. There are two ways that we've set about to be able to give minority women and veteran organizations more of an opportunity to bid on work, and in the process, to lower the cost of the contract. So competition drives down cost. And when you only have one company bidding on a contract or on a project, the cost is going to be higher than if you have five companies bidding. So we've opened up opportunity by creating something called Beacon. And you can go right to the city's website and you can click on and you'll be a part of it. What Beacon does is we find the companies that can do the work instead of having the companies try to go through the Byzantine structure of government contracting. So if you hang drywall and you want to bid on some of the work the city's doing on hanging drywall, you have to know when the city posts in a paper, be able to know how to do the contract and all this stuff that only a few companies know how to do. Instead, what we do now is once you sign up once, we send you a text message and an email every time a contract comes up, and we ask you to bid on the work. Best case I can give you, when we started, the contract to clean our senior centers. You know, we hire a cleaning company that comes in, cleans the bathroom, cleans the floor. We've always had one company that bid it. When we put it out and we used Beacon, we had 14, and the contract went to a minority company. That's the type of way that government can be interactive, taking it out of the old ways of dark shadows to be able to maneuver your way through government contracting and shine a light on it. That's why we call it Beacon. Light is the best disinfectant. The second way we're doing it is we're breaking down contracts. So big contracts that could go out that were too big for small companies to bid on are now being broken down into smaller contracts to get more people to bid on them. So when you have a contract that's written that's so big that only one or two companies can bid on it, well, you basically spoiled the process right from the very beginning. So we're breaking down the contracts into smaller contracts and getting other people the opportunity to bid on them that may be a sole proprietorship or a company that has one or two employees. And we're bringing dozens and hundreds of new companies into the process in the first 6 months.
Ted, thank you for that call. 412-246-2002. Let's go to Joseph on the South Side. Joseph, hi, you're on Essential Pittsburgh with Mayor Peduto. Did we lose Joseph? Evidently we did. Joseph wanted to ask about affordable housing units. He was specifically wondering how many have been built since your term as mayor began. You have recently worked out an agreement to make sure that the Crawford Square development in the Hill District maintains affordable housing units. Explain what you've done here.
Yeah, I don't have the specific numbers. I'll have to get those because that's the second time somebody asked me on specifics since 2013 how many have been built. I'm just trying to think. We've done about 200 in Larimer, about 150 or so in the Hill, and about 150 in East Liberty. So just in those communities, whatever that equals, I don't know. I wasn't good at math. That's why I'm a politician. and then we have plans for in the next several years, thousands more. But that still doesn't get us where we need to get. We have right now a need for 7,000 affordable housing units in the city. That's the number of people who have applied and qualified for Section 8 voucher in order to be able to go into affordable housing that don't have a house to go into. So we're working on a couple of different initiatives, one with HUD, others with Councilman Burgess and Representative Ganey, and another one where we are putting together the follow-up to what we've done in Larimer and looking to do it in the Hill. But it's a challenge. I mean, it is a constant challenge. Penn Plaza, I think, you know, is a good example. Mm-hmm. Penn Plaza is a privately owned apartment building. So there is no guarantee that people can live there. Just if you're renting a house or you're renting anything, the landlord can always say, I'm going to do something different with this. You have to leave. What makes Penn Plaza different is for the first time ever, city government has gotten involved in order to help poor people to be able to stay in there as that transition happens. And then we hired a relocation service to find them a place to be able to move to. Think about the history of this city. We have forced people out of public housing. We have forced people out of public housing and told them they had to leave and didn't provide them a place to go to. For the first time, we are getting involved in private housing in helping to get people that transition.
So if somebody's forced out of Penn Plaza, where would they then maybe go to?
So there are people.
Are they going to be able to find that on their own, or is the city helping them to not only to move to a place, but to find another place?
Yeah, the relocation company was hired several hundred thousand dollars to help each individual over the course of the next couple of years to be able to find a place. There's also a contract that was written into where the developer has to pay each person $800 in order to start in the process, and then another $800, and that $1,600 will help them with their moving costs to be able to get relocated. And there's also direct involvement with our housing authority, our URA, and the mayor's office down to the individual basis. We've already relocated over 75% of the people. There's a handful of people who we have left till the end of the year, and we're working with the developer so that nobody falls through the cracks. Zero. Zero. That's our goal. But I also, you know, have to say it also represents the real first occasion where somebody can point and say gentrification is real in East Liberty. It's hard to say it when it was an empty parking lot that became a building, or when it was a abandoned taxi cab station or a car wash. You know, a person wasn't forced to leave. But in Penn Plaza, you have poor people who are being pushed out so that new housing that is not affordable can move in. And so before this happens again, what we're doing is we're creating an affordable task force with funding to be able to say to developers in the future, hey, you want to build in East Liberty? Well, if you build Market, we're not going to be a partner with you, not financially. If you build 20% of those units affordable, we'll be able to partner with you up to this level. If you build up to 40% affordable, we'll be with you up to this level. And we're going to use what resources the city government can offer in order to create a model of affordability that will continue in East Liberty's future.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, making his monthly visit to the program. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. We need to take a break. We'll be back to take your calls, emails, and tweets on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and our guest today is Mayor Peduto, or at least for the first part of the program. The mayor is with us, making his monthly visit. And if you want to join the conversation with a comment or a question, you can join us at 412-246-2002. Let's go to Denise in the Hill District. Hi, Denise. Welcome. Hello. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Yes, I would like to speak regarding the discrepancies in the two Pittsburghs. I'm sure you're aware with the of the reports that have been out, particularly mentioning how white privilege factors into some of the situations we find ourselves in. And I'm wondering how the mayor would use his white privilege to level the playing field in Pittsburgh.
Well, Denise, I think I do that almost every day. I would say that I have more than white privilege. I'm blessed. I had what most people don't have. I was raised in a home with two parents. My dad was a school teacher who went to become a salesman and then became a school teacher again and was able to afford on his salary to raise four boys. And my mom stayed home with me and basically gave me opportunities to succeed in life. My brothers were older than me and made sure that I was reading before I was ever in first grade. So that white privilege came at a very early age, and I realized that a lot of people in my city don't get that same opportunity. And that's why I try to start, even before they start in school, with pre-K initiatives, creating opportunities now to teach every kid in Pittsburgh schools to learn how to swim, which is a life skill that is needed, opening up the pools and making them free, creating the first after-school dinner program for our poorest kids, who are both black and white, because we also have kids that are being left behind and not giving those opportunities. A lot of the success that we see throughout Pennsylvania can be determined by zip code. And then what compounds that problem is when we get into the issues of race, and we're basically systematically, through over 100 years, rules and laws have been created that have been to the detriment of African-Americans in this country and certainly in the city of Pittsburgh. So I try to break down the barriers where I see them, but I also try to understand what Dr. King understood, which we have a war on poverty that affects us all. And when he spoke about that day that he saw, he spoke about little black children and little white children together. And I try not to get drawn into pushing it for one or the other.
Thank you for that call, Denise. Mayor, there have been some unfortunate incidents involving local police in the news of late, one involving Bruce Kelly Jr., who was shot and killed by Port Authority police during a January 31st confrontation in Wilkinsburg. And also, the DA is refiling charges against a policeman caught on a surveillance video repeatedly punching a drunk 19-year-old fan at Heinz Field last year. What concerns, looking at these, the overarching repercussions of incidents like these, what concerns do they raise for you?
Well, I mean, obviously they raise the question of keeping both the trust and a ability to work with community and police. Nothing gets solved unless the community is a partner in helping to solve crimes. Nothing will further alienate that and create even more tension than when people think police are given certain rights beyond what they're given to wear the badge and carry a gun. So we were involved in the case that was down at Hines Field, and the magistrate threw the case out, even though there was no reason that was given by the bench of why the case should have been thrown out. Our own training expert stated that the use of force in that incident went beyond what was required. And now there's the strong potential of the DA being involved in refiling it, and we will partner with the DA in doing that. So I've got to build that trust back, and I've got to let people know that if somebody did something wrong, that they will be tried just as anybody else would be. And that's the level of professionalism that I want within our police bureau. I can't get into the details of the case because we probably will be going back into court. But that's really where it stands. It has to be that people see that the police and the city government and those that are involved in the judicial system are treating everybody fairly. And when you have incidents like this where there isn't even an opinion from a judge of why incident would be thrown out, it raises questions.
You are speaking at a Syrian summit tomorrow evening to discuss advocating for the allowance of Syrian refugees to gain entrance and housing in Pittsburgh. Have recent events in Germany, in which refugees were reportedly committing violent crimes, altered your stance at all?
I mean, I had the opportunity to talk with the mayor of Dusseldorf, and brilliant guy, Georgetown Law graduate, somebody who really understands the issue. I asked him about what it was like. You know, Dusseldorf is a small city, and they have taken in 7,000 Syrian refugees. 7,000. Think about this. The president's talking about bringing 10,000 in for the entire nation. Mm. The city of Dusseldorf took in 7,000. Now, when you don't have access to shelter and schools and healthcare and all these other things, situations are going to arise. And what we're talking about in this country is minuscule compared to what all the bordering countries around Syria and northern Iraq and all of Europe has already done. And in countries like Jordan, where it's now almost one out of every four people are refugees.
Turkey.
You're seeing incidents occur because there is no capacity to take this on. But as a civilized world, if we all took a little bit, these incidents wouldn't happen. So you create a system where it's going to break down. It is going to break down. And then you go, aha, see what happens? And you want to bring that here? Or else you understand that we're flying around space on one rock and we're not going to get off of it. And we got to work together to be able to solve problems. And you start to say, okay, I'll take this and I'll take that, and you help each other. So we live one life on this planet, and I would like to live on a world that understood that we're together and we try to help to solve each other's problems. Because God only knows if it was us and that there was something that was happening in our country where people would have to leave for fear that their family and themselves would be killed, and the rest of the world put up gates and say, no, stay there.
Grant Oliphant, president of the Heinz Endowments, wrote an op-ed piece for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette called Flint and Us. Pittsburgh can't afford to tell itself it can't happen here. And in that piece, he's referring to the drinking water crisis in Flint. And Mr. Oliphant referred to Pittsburgh's P4 partnership and how it's laid out a vision for our community's future predicated on people, planet, place, and performance. You've been very much involved in spearheading that. Mm-hmm. And how the situation in Flint represents a catastrophic failure of all four of the P's in the P4. So how do we make sure that doesn't happen here?
Yeah, so what happened in Flint was P1. It was profit. It was what's the cheapest way to get this water to these people. And it didn't look at any of the other factors that we look into it. And, you know, I did bad in economics in college, so I'm not going to try to say it, but I never really agreed that that Adam Smith's philosophy was correct, that, you know, economics, everything that is not a part of how much that widget costs and how many widgets you can make and what your profit can be is how you should do things. Everything else is an externality. The pollution you create, the pollution that goes in the water, how much you pay your workers. No, they're not externalities. They are all factors in the cost of what you're creating, because somebody else has to pick up the cost and pay for it out of their pocket if you just allow it to be how much money can I make. So what happened in Michigan was a pure classic example of what happens when you have a profit-only mission. And when the state came in and they wanted to see the cheapest way to give people water, and they didn't take into effect the factors of the people or the environment, you ended up with a horrendous, horrendous catastrophe. So P4 in Pittsburgh, what we're working to do, and we've been pretty successful in it, we want to bake it in. We want to bake it into how we provide government services. We want to bake it into how we provide tax breaks and incentives for development. We want to bake it into all the different components of how we run city government. And if we do that, then we're holding everyone to a higher standard than a single bottom line. And I believe as well that eventually that's how the world will look at economics, that it won't be simply about how do I make a profit or a bigger profit, but how does what I'm doing affect the people that I am both employing and those that I'm selling to? How does it affect the planet and not making it worse, but working to make it better? How does it involve performance on all the different parts of how I'm doing my project, and how does it enhance the place where I'm doing it and making it? And I think if you start looking at it under that lens, you avoid the problems that happen in Flint.
We're just about to time here. In fact, we're going over time, but I wanted to let you, since you were here last, Mayor, you have launched something called 30 Neighbors, 30 Days. What are some of the details you can share with us before we wrap this up?
Well, I just think it's a good way for Pittsburgh to understand all the new neighbors who are moving in. I think it would receive Mr. Rogers' seal of approval. It's the stories of the people who now call Pittsburgh home, who came from all over this world, the difficulties they had in when they first came here, and the things that they love about Pittsburgh. And it's a good read. If you have a couple minutes, just look it up. You can Google it and find out about the people that call this city home that are your neighbors.
Sounds good. Mayor Peduto, as always, a pleasure visiting with you. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll look at what's being done locally to encourage more people to become foster parents. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.